Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast. This is a podcast where we delve into the darker side of our existences. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair games as we discuss murder, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, the paranormal, and the dark depravity of the human soul. I am your host, David Pottle, and as always, my co-host, Forrest Smith. How are we tonight, Forrest?
Doing great. How is it? How about you?
good. Very good. With us as well is Rachel.
Hi, Rachel, guys.
Welcome back.
Thank you again for having me.
And, glad to be back. And we got John Herman here again to drop us some knowledge in our Diving Deeper into the Darker podcast, as well as, you know, being Herman and being part of the podcast.
Herman!
You're welcome.
Awesome, guys. It's glad to be back. We're good. I think we've got a good, fun-filled night. I think we're going to dive deep into the darkness of humanity, like, for real. John's got us a really good section later on.
The dark web, at least.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Well, we're going to dive right into the first news story. I've got one here from KTLA News. I'm not really sure where that's out of. Most likely Los Angeles, but I could very well be wrong. There's a story, the headline goes, train carrying 10 million pounds of human feces has been stranded in Alabama town for months.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's true. I saw it.
On the Facebook. Yeah, it was captioned with the title that, let's hope it doesn't get hot out.
Oh, but it's fixing to get hot down in Alabama, that's for sure.
Oh, Atlanta.
So right now, dozens of train cars carrying 10 million pounds of poop are stranded in a rural Alabama rail yard. Technically, it's bio-waste, but to the 982 residents in the small town Pariah, that's just semantics.
All aboard the Excrement Express. Come on, ride on the poop train.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good Lord, John.
Poop train now.
I love that.
Ride on the poop train.
I can only imagine. I mean, the worries. Let's see here. They want it gone, obviously.
No.
Yeah, you would think so, right?
Park it right in my house, charge you 15
bucks
a day.
The load has been there for almost 2 months, and it's making the whole place smell like a rotting animal carcass.
Oh,
to add insult to injury, it isn't even their poop. For the last year, waste management facilities in New York and one in New Jersey have been shipping tons of bio-waste, literally tons, to Big Sky Environmental, a private landfill in Adamsville, Alabama. But in January, the neighboring town of West Jefferson filed an injunction against Big Sky to keep the sludge from being stored in the nearby railway.
Think of it as like involuntary composting.
But it's horrible. But this is human feces, though. This is the grossest of gross feces on the planet, in my opinion.
That's gross.
We are horrible animals. We eat horrible things, and we all shit horrible things out of our bodies.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine 10 million pounds of this just in. You've been down south. I don't know. Any of you guys have been down south?
Well, we've all been at a porta potty on a hot day.
Yeah. But have you ever been downwind of a pig farm down south?
Well, they got lakes of pig.
Oh, that's so gross.
Excrement.
Gross. I mean, that's just as equally as bad, I would say.
Oh. Yeah,
but 10 million pounds of just sitting there, and God, and it's going to get hot out
very soon
until they figure this out.
So are the cars enclosed? Because you would think as it gets hot, the gases would expand.
They're boxcars.
Oh, they're boxcars.
Yeah.
It's
disgusting.
That's leaking.
Yeah. Let's see here. It says it was successful, but as a result, the poop already in transit gets moved to Parish, where there are no zoning laws to prevent the waste from being stored. So basically, they made an injunction for more coming in, but the stuff that's already there isn't moving out. So there's 10 million pounds of human waste just sitting there in this town in Alabama.
Awesome.
With no protection for it.
No.
For the town, at least.
No,
as far as federal regulations go.
Yeah, and the mayor of the town says it's so frustrating.
Well,
it's so frustrating because he can't do anything about it, and all those people are just smelling this human waste just wafting up at him.
That's ridiculous.
Just the wrong wind on a warm day would make...
I wonder if this is how the zombie apocalypse starts.
It is.
Probably, right?
You almost made me spit my beer out.
This is why TV shows and movies don't explain it, because
it's probably something, yeah, like...
Oh, good Lord.
Biomedical waste stranded on the side of a train.
It goes on to say, it greatly reduces the quality of life, haul the the mayor of the town. You can sit out on your porch, kids can't go outside and play, and God help us if it gets hot. And this material is still out there. On Tuesday, when Hall spoke to CNN, the temperature in Pariah reached 81 degrees. Imagine, I mean, Alabama gets pretty warm.
Well, it's muggy.
Southern warm.
Humid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, breadbasket warm.
Delicious.
Delicious. Well, that's all I've got for my first news story. I mean, I don't want to go too much into it. It gets a little into, you know, the politics and stuff in the town. But that's pretty much what I wanted to say. But Forrest, you got a little news clip-it thing here for us?
Oh, hell yeah. So this is from Boston 25 News, April 1st, 2018, of course. You know, internet challenges can be meaningful, like the ice bucket challenge to fight Lou Gehrig's disease, or it can be dangerous, like the Tide Pod challenge, which has sent several students to the hospital. But the condom challenge is not only dangerous, it's downright gross.
No, this is the stupidest thing. I mean, humans are absolutely dumb. And why is it our young ones that are doing this ridiculous stuff?
The fucking internet.
Because yeah, we did stupid
That's
shit.
That's why.
Yeah, but I guess they have access to more stupid shit. We just...
They can see it and perpetuate it.
No, this is what happened. We used to make up our own stupid shit to do. Now everybody's copying this one dill hole who wanted to snort a condom.
Right, I mean, and it's ridiculous. It's not an April Fool's. There's kids actually doing this stuff.
So wait. Go back to that. What did they do with the condom challenge? You just said the condom challenge was dangerous, but what is the condom challenge?
Apparently, it is not a new fad, but it had been on the rise lately as some teens look for a way to fight boredom. Looking for the condom challenge on YouTube will provide plenty of examples.
Can't they just drink beer in the woods?
I know, like we used to.
Right.
Or like go down to the local skate park and just, you know, smoke and do kick flips. So, you know.
Is there a picture? So they're snorting condoms. Is it like the floss your nose thing? Like,
yeah, basically they just take a condom and try to snort it up their nose and get it through. It's ridiculous looking. They've got condoms hanging from their nose.
I'm sure people have done this.
Gagging, probably ruining their sinuses.
Yeah.
Going to the hospital afterwards.
Well, that, it's like, especially if you don't hold on to it, and you snort
it. Oh, it could get down your throat. Or easily create a vacuum where you're going to choke to death.
Let's see here.
Oh, great.
There are all kinds of drugs, and kids are clever, so it's just really, what are our kids doing? So that's what we try to share. A state education specialist said.
I don't. I mean, anything else?
This guy named Enriquez just said that teens are just going around trying to find stupid crap to do. I can't imagine if someone did it after 30 use. I'm sure people have done that too.
Oh, gross!
That's even worse. For us. But I'm pretty sure the ones that you've seen on the internet.
It looks pretty clean.
It's gross.
I just realized.
It's all good, man. All right, Herman, you've got a little treat for us, I think, too, don't you, as well?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This happened in England, Lancashire, I think so. Correct me if I'm wrong, folks from England.
Yes.
All right. So police seize over 3,000 penises during raid at Morgan Police Preston home. The Lancashire police were astonished to find over 3,000 embalmed penises when they raided the home of retired mortician Anthony Bowe. I like to call him Dick Johnson. There were shelves everywhere, filled with hundreds of glass jars. Each of them contained a penis floating in formalin. I put my penis in formaldehyde.
Yes.
A total of 53 criminal charges have already been filed against Mr. Bowe, and hundreds more could be filed over the next few days. Mr. Bowe will remain in custody for the moment as a psychiatric evaluation has been ordered to determine if he is fit to stand trial.
Do you think that he has a psychological problem? Obviously, he's been taking penises for quite some time because he's, what, a retired mortician?
That's a lot of fucking penises.
That's a lot of penises.
Yeah.
He's got a cock problem, I guess.
He's a little cocky.
Loves the cock.
Loves to be cocky.
That's weird. It's such a weird thing to want to collect. I mean, obviously there are people there. We've all know about the weirdly perverted people just have crazy sex fetishes, and I don't even know if this is a sex fetish or is it a control thing.
He started the world's first private cock museum. I don't know why we have to vilify that. I mean,
the problem is he's taking these cocks, these penises without
permission.
Yeah. Oh, and that's probably why he's spending time in jail right now.
I tell you what, if I die tomorrow, I would like you to donate my penis to the mortician.
Donate to the mortician.
Deal.
I don't need it where I'm going. I used that thing enough while I was here.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I don't need it anymore. Just put it in a glass jar and put it in the private penis museum in Lancashire, England.
Very nice, very nice.
Oh, just think of all the different types.
But imagine, what kind of jars are they? Are they pickle jars?
Oh, they're glass jars. Yeah, probably old...
probably mason jars.
Mason jars, pickle jars, anything this old man could get is, you know, you go into a Costco or whatever they got in England. That's too crazy. Thanks for sharing that with us today, John. I appreciate that.
I wonder if he puts the micro penises in, like, the baby food jars.
Micro penises. Baby jars. Little baby ones.
Little baby penis.
Oh, little micro penis. Oh,
all right. That's
awesome. Oh, good Lord. All right, guys. Well, it's Creepy Pasta Corner time. You guys ready for this one?
Hell yeah, man.
This one is called Roommate Troubles. This actually happened to me a few years back at the University of the Arts, Philadelphia. My sophomore year, I roomed with a girl named Kara. She was a jazz vocalist, but her main interest was opera. We had a small room on the sixth floor of a dormitory called Juniper Hall. The walls were thin, and her late-night singing and voice practices would keep me up late. After a month or so of lost sleep, I convinced her to move her late-night practices to the music studios in the Marion Theater building a block away. Around 8 o'clock one evening, Kara announced that she would be practicing late for the upcoming recital and probably wouldn't go home until around midnight. Great, I thought. That means I can go to bed early. I was beat, and I had a horrible day in the acting studio and was all ready to pass out as soon as I had had dinner. She said goodnight and left coffee and sheet music in hand. I made some grilled cheese and soup, gobbled it down, and immediately began to prepare for bed. By the time I got out of the shower, my eyelids were so heavy I could hardly brush my teeth. I pulled on my PJs and crawled into the top bunk of our bunk bed. I was out as soon as my head hit the pillow. I should take a second to describe the layout of our apartment. When entering the apartment, the bedroom was through a door immediately to the left. Our bathroom was inside the bedroom, but past the bunk beds. UArts is nice in the sense that you don't have to share bathrooms. Anyway, I woke up to the sound of the apartment door closing. I opened my eyes and groggily checked my phone, midnight on the dot. I rolled back over and closed my eyes. I heard Kara enter the room and stop in front of the bunk bed, checking to see if I'm actually asleep, I thought. She flopped down on the bed below me, which was strange, as she was a stickler for brushing her teeth and washing up before bed. Then again, exams were just around the corner and we were all exhausted. Mattress below me creaked and then was silent. I couldn't even hear her breathing. I started to drift off again and I was just on the edge of sleep when I was startled awake again by a noise. A key in the lock, the door opening, and Kara entering our apartment, humming an opera tune. The mattress below me creaked.
Creepy.
Chills. Can you imagine that? You know, little co-ed. Little, you know. What is in that bottom bunk?
Mm-hmm.
You got a little Boston Strangler thing going on, a little BTK killer going on.
the haunted ghost.
Of
the haunted ghost of some ancient college student.
I mean, it's probably built on an ancient Indian burial ground, or... next to McDonald's.
Yeah, which is, it sounds a lot like the screenplay I wrote in college. Oh, good Lord, guys. I love the creepypasta. All right, so we're going to get into our movie review. We're trying to move along here, everybody. So this movie review, I'm going to preface this right away, everybody. If you haven't seen this movie, watch the movie first.
Go see it.
Go out. Please. Into the theater. I mean, we're breaking news here, people. This is the review.
Spoiler.
We're not going to tell you what the movie is. We're just going to tell you to go see it. So spoiler. Go right now, turn the podcast off, and go see the movie that you think we're talking about.
Continue it right after, please.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Listen to John and do what John says.
Yes, just go right now and see the movie now. Go. Get away.
Shoot.
So what movie is it, Dave?
That movie is called A Quiet Place.
So good.
We're going to be breaking ground here, people, when this... drops. So please, again, spoiler, do not listen to this episode if you have not seen it. If you don't plan on seeing the movie, then come on along the ride with us. But
and do not make a sound.
It's going to be a spoiler. So A Quiet Place is a 2018 movie. It was released April 6th, literally the other day. It was directed by a John Krasinski, a screenplay by John Krasinski, Scott Beck, and Brian Woods. The story was by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, Paramount Pictures, and Platinum Dunes produced it. This movie is literally, it's like an hour and a half long, right, guys? It was
on the dot.
Yeah, 90 minutes. It's like, it's fast. It's it starts, it goes, and it's done. And it's a literal, like, ride. It got an 8.3 on IMDb as of today, actually.
Wow.
And it's a 97%.
On Rotten Tomatoes.
And what is it?
Keeping it fresh, right?
Certified fresh. Keeping it fresh. It's fresh. All right, so it's a 97%, not as, you know, 99 or whatever the highest, but it's still a great rating.
Oh, my God,
you're not going to find anything better than that.
Is it higher rated than Casablanca? That's what I want to know.
Who knows?
It's 97%.
It was on 100 before it came out. But
yeah. So here's what the tagline is. This is all they tell me, and if anybody wants to break it down a little bit better than me, that would be perfect. If they hear you, they hunt you. Period.
Yeah.
Tagline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that describes it, right?
Pretty much.
If you make a noise, these horrible, I don't know what they are. I didn't see the preview, so, here we go. Spoilers begin. But these horrible bug creatures, like, sort of reminiscent of the bugs from the Heinlein movie. What is it?
And people are also comparing it to the Demogorgon from Stranger Things. It's very similar in the way its head moves.
Starship Troopers. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Bug from Starship Troopers.
Yeah, it does look, it did kind of reminiscent of that. I mean, it's obviously a creature that has a hypersensitivity to sound, and, you know, and then the basic premise of this movie is there's a man, a woman, husband, wife, and they have, at the beginning of the movie, they have how many kids?
Three children.
Three children.
Yeah.
Hey, at the end of the movie, they have three children.
Bird.
It is true. At the end of the movie,
she has three children.
Yeah. And so it starts off right away with one of the characters being knocked out of the play. And then that one character being knocked out of the play pretty much sets the tone for the family.
Yeah.
But this whole time, this family can't say a fucking word.
Mm-mm.
They're using sign language, but I think what helped them in using sign language is the fact is that their older daughter, who you find out is
deaf.
And it puts an interesting twist on that whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually leads to the end and everything else. But what do you guys thought? What did you think of it, Rachel?
I love the movie.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of John Krasinski from The Office anyways. Jim Halpert. I've always loved he's just a great actor, and he puts his emotion into what he does, and you can see that in the movie.
Yeah, very good facial emotional and physical emotional. Like,
as far as directing this movie, I think he did a phenomenal job.
I would agree, absolutely.
I enjoyed it.
Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing.
I think it was fantastic. Very, very good. And I love the fact that they're married in real life.
Oh, they are.
He and Emily Blunt are a real life couple. And according to an interview I saw with John Krasinski, his wife had read the script and just decided she had to be. She had to do it.
Yeah.
Wow. She absolutely had to do it. He didn't originally want her as the lead, but after reading the script, she demanded.
It's probably because he wanted to kiss another woman. But give me my chance.
Well, look at that role that she played, though.
I think
what that woman had to go through.
Yeah.
Again, spoiler alert: this woman gave birth in a tub. Without making a frickin' peep. How do you do that? No drugs, nothing.
After stepping on a nail.
Burn. Yeah.
I think John Krasinski's acting in this was great because the majority of the time, I think they say a total of maybe 2-3 pages of dialogue audio together. Yeah. You know,
very little dialogue.
So they literally had to have expressive emotions and you know, even if you don't know sign language, you basically understood what they were saying. I mean, sign language is beautiful in that aspect, is that they're trying to portray the sign as best as they can to portray the meaning. But I thought it was wonderful. I think she did a great job. He did a great job. The directing in this is, again, it's an hour and a half movie. I mean, it is action packed. I mean, there are some quiet times, literally,
yeah.
I mean, and figuratively, where, you know, there's not much action, but the tension is always there. Never know.
They use silence to build tension. They use tons and tons of silence, so that it's dead silent and it's foreboding. And it's just the body language
more
of tension
more jump scares in this than any other movie I've ever seen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah, when you in the respect of the silence, it's like when something happens that makes a noise, you jump out of your seat. Like that scene where they were playing a game and the kid accidentally knocked over. The lantern. Mm-hmm. It made a huge noise and like
made me jump.
It's yeah. But like you said, it builds the tension, that silence.
Yeah, oh yeah.
If you know they're playing, there's that background noise. So the second that's taken away, any noise is going to be amplified and scary.
And I like how they put you in different perspectives with every shot. Like depending on the character with deafness and I guess kind of deafness with, you know, the implant.
Was it cochlear?
Oh yeah, her cochlear implant.
But her cochlear implant doesn't work at all.
Yeah, so when they panned to her and it was from her perspective, you heard silence. Like there was not a sound.
Well, there was a scene where there was a little bit of static. Well, the staticness.
Well, yeah, that's an important part of the story. But
right,
before that, before he gave her the second, you know, obviously he made more, but
yeah,
that second implant, she heard nothing. Right, absolutely nothing.
I think we're gonna the daughter and the son, so John Krasinski's character and the daughter with the cochlear implant in her ear, the deaf child, have this massive amount of tension between them too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It builds up this thing because she's a teenage girl and her dad is fucking pissing her off because she's not able to express herself or go along with them.
Well, and what she doesn't realize is that if she can't hear. So she can't hear and tell if she's making noise that's loud enough where she will be hunted, which is why he keeps her back and makes her stay while he goes off.
Right, but she's a 13-year-old-ish hormonal girl is like, I don't get it.
Who feels responsible for her brother's death.
Also responsible for her brother's death, so you get that compounded. But she isn't getting the fact that her father is doing this and being this stricken because of that first incident where the first child dies. He's now this 100% safety first.
Mm-hmm.
And like she doesn't get the fact that she can't hear what's going to happen, so she's a liability.
Yeah.
Because again, she's just not getting it through her teenage brain. You know,
damn teenagers.
The setting was cool too because they used this farmhouse in the middle of nowhere kind of feel with a beautiful 500 acres of perfectly planted corn that were definitely planted in silence. row after row of silently planted corn on this beautiful farmhouse. And it was really cool because the isolation was real. Like you could feel an isolated family. It was just them literally against the world, against all these crazy creatures that would at the drop of a hat come and attack. And that helped to build tension. The only time you see somebody that's not in the family, it's terrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
One time you get one extra person, and it is probably one of the most terrifying moments of the whole movie.
And we're not going to blow that scene because we're nice.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, though. I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, everybody drink. Forrest just said I'm not going to lie.
Here we go.
For those of you who are home and
playing
in a safe place,
lie.
Grab a beer, and we're playing I'm not going to lie. So every time you hear that phrase, take a drink.
Unless you're driving. And then enjoy your coffee.
Yes.
when they ran into that guy, I didn't really pick up on that tension at first. I didn't think about it. And then it got intense, and I was just like, oh.
Yeah, well, let's not ruin it for anybody. We said we weren't going to ruin it for anybody.
Oh, no,
I wasn't
going there.
Part. Yeah, okay, good.
But I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, you didn't see the tension. Nobody saw it eventually, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, you know?
It gets crazy.
It does. So, what... I really enjoyed the movie. I would give it top marks all the way around. I would probably give it a 97%. I mean, if we were going to do that, that respect. But one more thing before we get to that. John, when you're talking about the setting, the cornfield, I don't know if any of you guys ever have literally been lost in a cornfield.
I have.
I have. Living in North Carolina, we grew up around tobacco and corn. We went to a friend's house once, and I walked out into a cornfield all by myself. I walk 100 feet, maybe 200 feet in. You can't see anything. You're 3.5 feet tall. The corn stalks are 8 feet tall. And I was lost out there for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Just looks the same in every direction.
Crying.
It is the same in every direction.
And it's absolutely horrible, especially if you didn't walk in a straight line or if you were zigzagging through, you're screwed. And it was the most intensely horrible. It was like a traumatic experience in my life.
Sure,
and like,
it was.
That's why I will refuse. We every year, you know, we'll go near,
it's
you know,
scary.
The pumpkin picking, and we'll be like, "You guys want to go in the corn maze?" And I'm like,
No! No, no, please! Don't make me!
Rachel, I mean, a couple years
you
back.
You did it once, and I'm very proud of you and happy that you did it. But you were panicking the whole time.
Absolutely, it was horrible. It was a very bad experience. But I love this movie again, like I said. I Rachel, you loved it?
Oh, I loved it, absolutely. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of John Krasinski in general. I love the acting. I love the writing. I love the way it was shot.
Oh, yeah.
I think the way it was edited was phenomenal. What sounds you do hear in the movie were amazing as well, the sound design.
Yeah.
Sound and the lack of sound design was awesome, too.
Oh, yeah,
I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Forrest, I know you had an issue when we first saw the movie.
Yeah.
You didn't think there was enough background story.
Yeah, the first thing I wanted to get to also was I thought it was funny how before the movie started, someone, an officer would come into the theater and say, you know, you can't make any noises. You can't make any noises mainly because of how much of a lack there is of dialogue.
How quiet
and sound.
The movie is.
And the officer was a real police officer that was actually standing in the movie theater the entire time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, you can't. You make a noise, you're gonna leave.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, this movie is that quiet.
Some
it is
lady's fucking
part,
off too.
It is literally part of the movie, the silence. So please do not. Yeah, there were a couple people giggling down in the bottom
and
first row.
Still,
yeah, they
you
walked.
See that cop walk so fast? It was awesome.
Yeah.
Get him.
Nice. more serving than protecting, I think. But you know, hey, good on them. I hope they weren't on the beat at the time.
And if they were
paid by the theaters,
I mean, if they were, you know, even if there was a horrible, let's to not even think about it, but a movie theater shooter, they get cops on board. You know, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Millbury Police.
Yes.
Thank you, Millbury Police.
For keeping it quiet for us to watch A Quiet Place.
Definitely.
I think, John, what did you think of the film ultimately? Like,
I got a fish.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. Yeah, and going on to basically what you were just telling me, what I didn't care for at really. I mean, it was still a great movie, amazing film. That's the one thing, is I did like how they incorporated the backstory. You know, there's newspapers around, there's headlines you see, and there's pictures, I guess, people going missing, you know, stuff like that. But I wanted more. So I in my opinion, I had to ding it.
Well, I think that's the beauty of it, too, is, like, it kind of sets it up for a prequel.
Especially when the opening screenshot is
day
87.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know that this has been going on for 87 days.
That's 3 months already. So I would love to see if they can, you know, come back with a prequel.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't know if I think it would ruin it for me with a prequel and or a sequel. I think the movie in and of itself stands alone as a great story.
Seriously?
And I do not want, I would not want anymore.
Well, just like 90-minute... You know, length. I think it was perfect because any more, I don't think I could have handled it.
See, I thought it should have been longer. Especially if it's going to be a standalone.
But if you're looking at it from an artistic perspective, that moment in time, 87 days, and then what is it, 300 and something days?
It was like 470.
Yeah, 470 something. So that period, you saw how the family grew, what they lost, and then what they're gaining. But that's all I wanted to see. I thought, yes, it leaves you, the ending is open ended. It gives, gives the possibility of a prequel, sequel, sorry.
Yeah.
And it could be a prequel, but I don't want a prequel, and I don't even want the sequel. I'm completely 100% satisfied with what they gave us there.
I guess I'd be fine with both. I'd give the movie I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Solid review.
Yeah.
I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Johnny, you?
I think it's a reason why you go to the movie theater. They brought something completely new that I hadn't seen. They used silence as a character.
Mm-hmm.
The sound of silence was a character. So it was like, and we were talking about this on the ride home in the car. There's a piece of music, 4 minutes and 18 seconds, done by Philip Glass, which is a conductor, not a conductor, but a musician goes to a music stand and opens up a piece of music and counts the length of the piece and turns the page. When each measure is through, turns the page. And that piece of music is not the person making the music. And they always bring an instrument, which is hilarious. It's arranged for any instrument on earth. But
every instrument.
Every single instrument. But it's not the instrument, and it's not the musician who's counting and turning pages. It's the sound of the audience being uncomfortable. It's the coughing. It's the shuffling in the chairs. It's all of that. And this movie brought that. It brought that same feeling. It was the discomfort in the room was palpable.
Oh, yeah.
And in the scenes where it scared you to the point where you're like, I really can't take this anymore, you could feel that
from
everybody in the room.
Well, there was the buildup of that silent tension, and then the one thing that actually literally got you to jump out of your fucking seat was sound.
Yeah. Yes.
Noise.
Mm-hmm.
Any noise was, you know, you did your jump scare there. It's like, oh my God. Yeah,
You talked about that lantern, and the theater gasped. Everybody was like, it was like, no!
But you didn't just hear that. You felt it.
You felt the flame.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they use the surround sound, the way that the sound recording guys get no credit, the way they use the surround sound, like the sound would come from the right side of the theater, the back or the front. So it would be like a wave of reaction. It was really cool to see. And that to me was new, and I've never seen it before. So if you get the opportunity to see something new in the theater, my God, go see it.
Yeah, right.
Go see it. I loved it. I'm with Forrest. I'm definitely a solid 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10, yeah.
I'm the same with the fellas here.
For 9?
I agree. 9 out of 10, for sure.
I would give it like a 9.5. I think 9.5? It's near perfection from all aspects. Editing, recording, you know, all of it story-wise. I mean, it takes a lot of work to write a screenplay and a story.
Yeah.
With no fucking dialogue, with no talking, it's literally action, and then suspense the whole movie.
Yeah.
But even in the action, our characters are not making noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Noise is the biggest horror of this movie.
Yeah.
It's amazing. 9.5 near
and
perfection.
Once. Character gave birth. She went through labor without making a peep.
So I would give it a solid A out of 43 bajillion Nurkle Knuckles.
So it sounds like the Darker Side podcast is telling you to get off your ass and go see this movie.
We didn't do a great
job ruining for you either. So
no, we actually kind of didn't spoil it as we did the last couple
of hurry up and go see it.
Please go see it, guys.
We did a great job. Thank you, guys. This is the Darker Side podcast review. Although, wait, hold on. Four words.
Oh
my God.
Yeah, sorry about that. Forrest, you go.
It was fucking amazing.
Yep, it sure was.
Mm-hmm.
Jody?
Yeah, just go see it.
Yeah, just go.
Yeah, just go.
Just go see it.
Just go see it.
Don't count the guys don't count.
Just go see it. Rachel?
They hear, they hunt.
They hear, they hunt.
Oh,
yeah. Right the tag time. That poor fucking family. That's all I can say. You know, I mean, it also, I mean,
It was one thing to the next.
Great movie. I mean, and again, I think I said this before. It was like, it could be any of us in that situation. It could be Rachel and I. You know, it could be you and Foley. You know, you and John.
Yeah.
It could be that. The empathic in me was just dying the whole time. I'm like,
my hair was standing up too in some of those moments.
Great movie though, guys. Please check it out. And again, I'm glad that we didn't ruin the whole thing for you. We kind of left some of it available to watch. We have a tendency to rip these movies wide open and eviscerate them and let you know everything that happened. So your gift to us or gift from us is to that we didn't ruin it all for you. Go see A Quiet Place.
Please.
Good marks, everybody. All right, guys. We're ready for our next segment here. We're going to dive deeper into the darker side. John? Getting lost in the forest. This is a segment where Forrest is going to briefly give us a description of what's chafing his balls, and then he's going to throw us into the forest, getting lost in his fucking brain.
Hell fucking yeah, man.
All right, brother. Let's get on this. What do we got for us today?
Okay, guys, get ready. This is a lot more shallower than my previous ones. Military employee charged with child pornography offenses.
Okay.
And why this makes me really fucking angry is mainly the fact that, you know, the Army has always been, used to be very strict with sexuality and all this awesome fucking shit. And you know what? I have friends, and my fiance John has friends who are associated with the armed services, and his friends are fucking assholes. Like, a lot of them are, like, I'm not saying this is how they all are, because I know they're not. It's just a small amount of them. They're assholes. Like, they're pretty bigoted against, you know, gays or colored people of color, and it's just, it makes me so freaking angry because, you know, people keep even, I've even been told in arguments, like, why don't you sign up for the service and go do something better instead of, like, getting into the arts or whatever and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, for one, I was forced to sign up for the draft. I tried to when a recruiter came to my high school, mm-hmm. and I was already considered denied, mainly because I had to take medication for asthma, for my ADD, all that stuff. As soon as they knew I took those things and I had asthma or whatever and I had a history of all that crap, I was already, like, you know, was denied to be able to join these services when I was in high school at the time, at the age where I didn't know where else to go.
Right.
You know, I wanted to go somewhere where at least I know I could be part of something, you know, and in
high school, than yourself kind of thing.
Yeah. And in high school, when you don't really have any friends, like up here in Grafton and high that I went to, you know, it was something that I kind of wanted to do. Well, I thought about it. I just applied just for whatever. And that's when they denied me. But what really makes me mad is just the way some of these army vets that sign up and they, you know, I support them fully. They fight for our country. They're amazing. You know, but some of them still see homosexuality or anything in the LGBT community as wrong, even though our government still shows, you know, that kind of the same exact thing. They're still saying all these things about the LGBT community and they're still passing religious legislation and all this crazy crap. And yet, you know, these people are the ones that are these, you know, that associate with going into the services like the army. They still have this mindset, and it's just, especially with using the word fag and all that awesome shit, or making videos like gay videos, gay type videos online specifically. Even though, like, all those men in those videos are all straight and whatever, and that can be a little offensive as well. So that was just me with my take on that. Do you guys have anything to say?
So what you're saying is basically what you're mad about is the fact that this person right here is a straight male, most likely, who was caught with gay porn and is a member of the U.S. military in some way, which triggered you. Right. The fact that, oh, well, we allow these people in our you know, these types of people, again, we never know about these people until they get caught.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so fucking sad.
And it is sad that we have these people and then they allow these type of people in our, but they don't do extensive backgrounds. They just want bodies in our military.
Child pornography.
Right. And then you find these people who are literally kid peddlers and perverts and stuff like that, but they won't let somebody who loves another man or a woman who's born a man mentally but born physically a woman, you know, yeah. They won't allow them into the military. So that's what's chafing your balls, is that we allow this depravity, this human depravity.
Yeah.
But then they look at, like, just homosexuality or LGBTQ as, again, equal to this type of depravity.
And transgender,
right,
cancer now.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why it would piss you off for sure. Absolutely, Forrest. And, you know, any of you guys got anything to say about this? No?
No.
All right, guys. I mean, Forrest, honestly, thank you for your passion, your fire, and everything else. We do enjoy this topic.
Thank you.
Again, it does.
Hey, I just want to say to the men and women in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, any country that you're in serving our country, I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, thank you.
We love you.
100%.
We love you all.
We absolutely do.
And there's good people and there's bad people in the world, and they're everywhere. And for those of you that are out there fighting for me, man, thank you. Thank you to the men and women of the armed services from the bottom of my heart.
And for those who are fighting to want to fight for us, you know, I'm with you guys. Seriously, the gays, the trans, LGBTQs, all these people,
yeah,
who are fighting to be able to fight for our freedoms. Please continue to fight for that right and that ability. And I think that's what kind of Forrest was trying to hit on in this. And good. All right, guys. Well, I'm very happy with this episode. We did a great job, guys. I'm you know, clear, concise.
It was
to the point. And John, thank you so much for diving us deeper into the Silk Road and the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Hell yeah, free Ross, man.
Our new stories were a little interesting today, and it was very nice to get away from kid problems and dying children. It was a pleasure to not have to talk about that today. Hi, I'm David Pottle. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find my band, Frenemy, on Facebook. It's at Frenemy Providence. It's F-R-N-E-M-Y. Frenemy. please like, share. Please share this podcast with all your friends.
Please.
Go into our site and then just, you know, invite everybody from your friends list to it. We'll get five people. That'll be awesome. You know, pass the word, spread the word. Please download. Pretty soon we're going to be on Google Play and we're going to be on Spotify, hopefully, right?
Yeah,
once that opens up, it'll be a bigger market for us. It'll be great. Everybody, please just like, share this podcast. Thank you very much for coming, as always. Rachel, you good?
Thank you again for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to come back next week and share with you some really cool information. I don't want to give it away, but you'll just have to tune in next week.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Forrest?
I just want to say thank you for everyone. Thanks for being here, Rachel. You know, thanks for being here, John. Thank you, and having an amazing story. And just want to let the listeners know. Yeah, please like, share, subscribe. You know, comment. Please rate us on iTunes podcast. You know, Instagram. If you want to rate us on Facebook, we would love that. Or if you have anything you want us to cover, or any stories of any sort, like creepypasta, stuff like that too, please feel free to message us on Instagram, Facebook, all that awesome stuff, even YouTube.
Write some shit and send it in. Write us a story about the creepy roommate
or just send us links.
Yeah. Send us links. Yeah,
I would love to do like listener creepypastas.
Yeah, listener pasta would be fun. That would be great. Actual literal listener pasta would be a great thing to do.
Send us your shit. You're amazing. We love it.
Yes.
John, do you have any links for your deeds?
For my personal self-aggrandizement? Yes. I am Herman Brau, HermanBrau. It's German word for beer, at Instagram.com. You can check me out there. I'm also on Facebook. I got a Twitter account that I don't actually use much. I just read whatever our president said while he was on the shitter. So, but you can find me there too.
Awesome. Well, guys, please again like and rate on iTunes. It means the world to us. If you guys like, rate it and comment. It gives us numbers. It gives us the ability to move and get bigger.
And please check out our Twitter as well.
Right. Please. And again, I'm David Pottle, with Forrest Smith, Rachel, and John. We are the Darker Side Podcast. If you don't like what we have to say, please message us on Facebook. Write us. We're open to discussions. This is the Darker Side.
We like trolls.
We do like trolls.
Oh, hell yeah.
We like trolls because we can open up conversation.
Yep.
And again, we like to delve into the darker side of humanity, the darker side of our existences. This is a podcast about that, ultimately. And it's just to make you aware and to give you some fun stuff to be to discuss, you know. Creepypastas, the paranormal, the darker side, the depravity of human, the Silk Road, stuff like that.
And if you also like if there's something you like, you know, please feel free to comment about that.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much again. This is our we're a great episode, everybody. Please come back next week.
Please. This is the Darker Side Podcast.
The darker side.
Darker side.
Darker side.
The night is so dark. All right. Have you all ever heard of a website called The Silk Road?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so briefly, The Silk Road was a website that was located in the deep web to allow the private sale of goods outside of the restrictions of the U.S. government, any government, really. It skirted regulatory agencies, state and local, federal laws, sort of a libertarian's dream, really, to allow people to choose what they would buy regardless of what the nanny state will allow. Already kind of sounds a little nefarious,
so
doesn't
this
it?
Are you talking about the dark web?
I'm talking about the deep web.
The deeper than the dark web?
Just the deep web.
Oh.
We'll get there.
Okay, good. So we're talking about a deep web at this point.
The deep web. So for the deep web, wow. Pardon me.
Yeah, pardon. It's all good.
I got stuck. So Wikipedia describes the deep web as parts of the World Wide Web whose contents are not indexed by standard web search engines for any reason. It's the encrypted part of the internet. Technically, your banking information is located in the deep web.
All right, so how do they... Oh, so this is basically just massively encrypted web?
It's the encrypted part of the web. So anything you can't find with a search engine, like I can't look up Rachel's bank account in the search engine, you don't want me to.
No, of course.
That's the deep web. And you can put tons of stuff's there. Like, all companies keep their information there, and that's really all it is. So when you hear deep web, people try to scare you. But that's all it is.
Well, how do they keep this just completely encrypted? Like, the encryption on these is that massive that it doesn't, like, you can't gain access to it unless you're a super hacker or whatever.
No. Well, I mean, I guess. I mean, if you're talking about banking information, you'd have to hack a website.
That's true. Okay.
But I mean, for the Silk Road, it used a couple of technologies to basically mask where it was located. So the IP address of the IP addresses of any computer tells you where the computer's sitting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Your computer has an IP address, tells the world, leaves a signature, and tells the world exactly where it is.
Yep.
So what these folks did is they used a program called Tor, T-O-R.
The Tor program, yeah.
Yeah. And what that does is it's an onion program, but what it does is it just, using layer upon layer, sort of hides the location of things. If you were running Tor on your computer and you run everything through it as a browser, it leaves no signature of your IP address. So in other words, you're not telling anybody where you are, who you are, what you are.
Right.
So my plan for this piece originally was to tell you guys about an idealistic youth who started a global private marketplace that turned into an underground den of drugs, human trafficking, murder for hire, and even child pornography.
Sweet. all the great things of life, all the darker side of life, right? Our existences.
Right. So that's the government story.
Of course.
The government story.
Yeah, the official, John, quote unquote.
The quote official, the alleged government story. So anyway, back to the Silk Road. The website was first launched in February of 2011, and it was used primarily for the movement of drugs outside of the usual method. And for the usual method, I'm of course referring to driving to a drug den in a bad part of town, passing over a handful of money, and hoping you don't get shot. Also, hoping that the drugs that you get are actually the drugs that you purchased and not just a mixture of crocodile and fentanyl.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a Florida party right there.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Crocodile dogs.
Crocodile.
Yeah,
that's the good stuff. Don't buy the pink heroin.
No, it's supposed to be brown or
stay away from the pink heroin. That is crocodile. Basically, virtual drug deals don't allow for physical attacks, right? People who don't meet face-to-face can't hit each other or shoot each other. And that's a quote from a study that was done actually praising the Silk Road.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like a decent means of procuring your illicit or a governmental illegal substances.
Well, yeah, and it's also, it protects your identity. So, I mean, a senator could be out there selling drugs.
Oh, yeah, anybody could be.
On the internet.
I guess that's the beauty of the Silk Road, right?
Yeah.
Anonymity. Yeah.
Log into Tor. Log into Tor, buy your box of MDMA, pay with Bitcoin, and have it shipped to your house.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
So the site was obviously an instant hit, and it had forums, which really became a community, sort of a place where radical libertarians, crypto-anarchists, cypherpunks could all get together and talk about the government stealing our information and using our personal computers.
Nihilists
as their own,
as well.
Probably. Using our personal computers as their own spy machines. You know, all in the name of national security.
Right.
And this before Snowden.
Mm.
Oh, way before.
So, for a while, the Silk Road was run by an admin known only as SR Admin. And in February 2012, on one of the forums, this was posted. And I quote, "Who is Silk Road? Some call me SR, SR Admin, or just Silk Road. But isn't that confusing? I am Silk Road, the market, the person, the enterprise, everything. But Silk Road has matured, and I need an identity separate from the site and the enterprise of which I am now only a part. I need a name." He chose the moniker Dread Pirate Roberts.
Nice.
You guys heard this one?
Dread Pirate Roberts. That is a reference to a character from a novel by William Goldman, The Princess Bride.
Oh.
Now, we've all seen the movie The Princess Bride, and we all love Buttercup and the Dread Pirate Roberts. Dread Pirate Roberts is the pirate character, the main, what do you call him, the anti-hero?
He was the hero. I mean, he was played by Cary Elwes.
Right, yeah, of course.
This dark, nefarious, masked figure.
The Dread Pirate Roberts. Exactly. Like, it's so mysterious. You know, there's no background. You don't know who he really is because he goes by the moniker.
Mm-hmm.
The Drip. And I think that's a perfect name for this character. Admin AR?
SR.
SR.
Silk Road Admin.
Silk Road Admin.
Yep.
SR admin.
So yep. so the Dread Pirate Roberts moniker in the book and the movie was passed down from pirate to pirate. You'd be the Dread Pirate Roberts, you'd make your money, and you'd get sick of the pirate's life, and you'd go to the next guy and say, you're now the Dread Pirate Roberts, I'm out of here. And no one ever knew that you were the Dread Pirate Roberts. It's total anonymity.
Hmm.
And that's going to come into play in this. So the Dread Pirate Roberts ran forums, and the company, which was at that point in 2012, a multi-million dollar affair, out front for all to see, to log in, and this was all done under the nose of the world's government. Governments, sorry.
Which is beautiful, in my opinion.
In an interview that the Dread Pirate Roberts gave to Andy Greenberg of Wired Magazine, of whom I reference a ton in this, he said, I didn't start Silk Road, my predecessor did. From what I understand, it was an original idea to combine Bitcoin and Tor to create an anonymous market. Everything was in place, he just put the pieces together.
It is a libertarian dream.
It is.
I mean, and I wholeheartedly believe in that libertarian spirit. That we should be able to have this market that isn't governed by everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the internet is the thing that was born to allow us to have this freedom.
Yeah.
I think it's a great concept in theory, but again, it leads down this dark silk road.
The silk road.
The darker side of humanity will take over anything if it can. I mean, that's the ultimate freedom. I mean, the openness and the availability and everything that they could do in the dark, the Silk Road. I think it's crazy. It's good, though.
Yeah, give people anonymity, and then you'd be amazed what they can do.
Oh, yeah, we've all seen the trolls on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all those trolls.
Yeah. You've got your Facebook muscles.
Oh, good Lord. All right, continue on, John.
All right, So Dread Pirate Roberts also said in that interview, at its core, Silk Road is a way to get around regulation from the state. If they say we can't buy and sell certain things, we'll do it anyway and suffer no abuse from them. But the state tries to control nearly every aspect of our lives, not just drug use. Anywhere they do that, there's the opportunity to live your life as you see fit, despite their efforts. So now I'm going to get into this. Who was the Dread Pirate Roberts? So allegedly, Ross Ulbricht, a kid in his 20s with a master's degree in engineering, got out of college and started a used book company called Good Wagon Books.
So he just sold used books?
He sold used books and he
donated. Online or?
Yeah, it was an online marketplace to sell used books. Failed miserably. Just failed. So his very next venture, according to the government and everything I've read, is the Silk Road.
Mm.
Oh, so one failed attempt and he jumps into the dark depravity of humanity?
Yeah, correct.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you believe the court case.
Yeah, okay.
So fast forward a few years, and he allegedly is the multi-million dollar man behind the Silk Road. It's a sole proprietor, it's head pirate in charge. And that, again, is according to the AUSA. Anyway, here's how they caught him. All of the safe movement of illicit substances using a currency not owned by any government fried Chuck Schumer's ass. He was a...
Chuck Schumer?
Charles,
Chuck Schumer?
The Chuck Schumer. Charles Schumer, Senator, Democrat, New York.
Oh, what a piece of shit.
he asked federal law enforcement to shut down the site, which the FBI was able to do briefly. The next goal was to get into their inner circle. And we'll post a picture, but here's what popped up when you looked at the Silk Road.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. It has every mm-hmm. American law enforcement
logo on
it.
This site has been seized by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It literally has every badge you could ever possibly imagine on the site.
How were they able to just shut it down that quick, considering they were using a Tor program?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't really get into that, but it wasn't long until things back up and running.
Do some research and get back to us on that.
I will.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling the listeners.
Oh, yeah, please.
I'm sure we've got some smart listeners out there. Let us know how they shut it down by, you know, while using a Tor program. Sorry about that, John.
Yeah, I'm gonna get into a couple of questions that I have about how they got to the servers.
All right, cool.
So in 2012, the government started an operation called Marco Polo.
Oh, perfect.
That's a great name, right?
Especially for the Silk Road.
Sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah. Silk Road, Dread Pirate Roberts, Marco Polo, this thing has it all.
Oh, yeah. It's all connected.
Correct. So law enforcement poses both vendors and buyers and basically just waited for somebody to slip up. They contributed to online forums, and they created one identity by the name of Nob, N-O-B. He was part of the DEA. He was active in the forums, and he eventually became trusted by the Dread Pirate Roberts. And eventually,
fucking weasel.
Yeah, Yeah, it's an arc.
Snake.
Yeah. And so eventually he caught one of the Silk Road admins known as Chronic Pain. Chronic Pain, I believe, was an IT. He was an IT guy for the Silk Road, so he helped the Dread Pirate Roberts with some of the admin stuff on the site. So what they did was Nob sold Chronic Pain some cocaine and waited for him to bring the package into his house.
Oh, wow.
So they shipped it to him, and then as soon as he got the package, he brought it into his house. They roll in, and they capture him.
That's how it always happens, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
you get one person to do it, and you get the narc involved, and then all of a sudden, now this person has an insider. You know, we've got now two people on the inside now.
Mm. Yeah, he used his own address in Salt Lake City.
What a fucking idiot.
Wow.
Idiot, too, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to get a box of cocaine shipped to your home address, so you kind of deserve what you get, I guess. Anyway, after this, Dread Pirate Roberts, in a conversation with Nob on the Silk Road, who at this point Nob was in the inner circles, is quoted to have said, "I have to assume he will sing," and he's talking about the Chronic Pain.
Right.
"I'd like to beat him up." So that was.
Is it a literal or figurative beat him up?
We'll get there.
All right, good.
So a little later, he said, quote, "Can you change that order to execute rather than torture?"
Whoa, 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 whoa. That's a big word there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So payment was allegedly made in Bitcoin, and the Fed staged a murder scene and sent pictures to Dread Pirate Roberts of the guy dead. There's pictures. You can see the pictures on the internet. They set up this gruesome murder in the
Chronic
desert.
Chronic Pain?
Yeah.
Is supposedly killed or was actually?
No, he's fine.
Oh.
He's fine. No, he turned state's evidence.
Wow. Okay. Jesus. It's like
entrapment. Almost, or like.
I mean, if you want to call it entrapment.
Nah, murder for hire, that's a tough one. But so there's a wonderful documentary that you can watch on it's on Amazon Prime called Deep Web. Came out in about 2015.
I will have to watch this.
About this. And I've taken a bunch from that. So according to Deep Web, five more hits were allegedly hired for a blackmailer, scammers, and a Hell's Angel. These are very suspect and completely hazy, because some of the names were actually fictitious.
So no actual information or database, like you can't find these people anywhere.
Yeah. Again, some of them totally fictitious. Some of them weren't. So
right.
the government did charge him with murder for hire and multiple.
Wow.
So they had Dread Pirate Roberts, but all they had at this point was a moniker. So they had to link him to somebody. They started to look in the Silk Road mentions on the web and eventually found Ross Ulbricht's LinkedIn profile.
Oh, which is fucking LinkedIn. Stop sending me your LinkedIn invites, people. I'm not going to fucking like you.
Which, to be fair, this LinkedIn profile is still there today. You can log in. I logged in and looked at it while I was doing
nice,
this.
Dude, nice, dude.
And it still says, and I quote, "Now my goals have shifted." And again, this is the kid who just failed at his book selling. "Now my goals have shifted. I want to use economic theory as a means to abolish the use of coercion and aggression amongst mankind. Just as slavery has been abolished most everywhere, I believe violence, coercion, and all forms of force by one person over another can come to an end. The most widespread and systemic use of force is amongst institutions and governments. So this is my current point of effort. The best way to change a government is to change the minds of the governed. However, to that end, I am creating an economic simulation to give people a first-hand experience of what it would be like to live in a world without the systemic use of force."
So that's all they had to go on?
What they did was they linked him to an account, a Gmail account called under the name Altoid, who was an admin for Silk Road, and they could trace Altoid back to Ulbricht's actual email address.
Oh, okay.
So the Dread Pirate Roberts was caught. I got a couple problems with that. One, he had no, according to FreeRoss.com, which is the website his parents have started to try to get him out of jail, and the Deep Web documentary, they go on to say that he has no computer coding experience. Again, he went to school for engineering.
Wow.
He failed at Good Wagon Books, his company, and now he's running a multi-million-dollar, multinational underground company. One man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Does he come from a libertarian background, though?
That's his sort of ethos that he developed in college.
That's absolutely fine. I mean, we all went through, I think, a similar. I mean, I know you kind of did. You come from we do have these liberal. We want these liberal freedoms, and we all have that type of thing about us. But it doesn't necessarily link him to. And I think that the links that they use to bring him in are weak at best.
Let's get there.
Okay. Let's.
So how did they catch him, I guess, is what you're asking me. An FBI posing as a Silk Road user, Cirrus, said that he had a problem with his account. So Dreadpire Roberts, or DPR, would log in and help people with their accounts. That's part of the customer service of this website. So Ross Ulbricht went to the San Francisco Public Library, logged into Silk Road as the admin, went into Sirius's account, and they bagged him with his computer open and logged in as Dreadpire Roberts.
In the library?
In the San Francisco Public Library.
Oh, wow, he's a millionaire? Public library. He's a millionaire. But he's in a library doing this.
Using their free Wi-Fi.
Right. Duh.
Yeah, but if he's running a tour program at his house, he should be able to not be picked up.
But if they get to where he was, it's just the library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because exactly. they know where he is, but if it happens at the library, it's not your house. I mean, it's at least a degree of separation.
True.
Well, that, and it's like if the cops come busting in the doors, he might have had a chance to slip through. But
that's true.
The idea being, if you're doing this in the library, you have your laptop open, you can set your laptop up to burn itself if you want.
That's true.
So when they caught him, they pulled him away from his laptop. They did it very quietly.
Wow, that's good.
And I believe there's a story, and I believe it's anecdotal, so don't quote me on this. And anybody on Earth, please correct me. But I believe they had like a couple that was just kind of like in the background doing couple things, and that couple bagged him.
Nice. Oh wow! So one of those scenes that you see in a movie where everybody is suspicious around when the person's looking around, they're looking at everybody. In fact, all of those people are literally watching.
Yep.
Yeah, of course.
That's probably the case. Like the couple over in the movie section was.
What are we getting, honey? I want to get All Dogs Go to Heaven, honey. You saw that when you were 13. I know, but I would really enjoy to see it again.
I want to get this guy.
Yeah.
Bag him. Boom.
VHS or let's arrest this bastard.
Right.
The FBI also got the server. And I'm tinfoil hat time, kids.
conspiracy.
The government allegedly found the server, and I read the you can go to freeross.com and get like the whole
Free Ross. Free Ross.
Woo! Let him out! You can get the whole collection of the trial. Just like the written out trial, the depositions, all that. It's all public, and they've posted it there for you guys to read.
Good.
It is a absolute mind-boggling amount of information. It's impossible to read it all. But what I did find was this. I was really curious how they got the server. So the server was located in Iceland. This is a foreign country, mind you.
What?
Yeah. So the server itself, there are two servers, two boxes, as we in the IT world call it, two computers located in Iceland that were running the Silk Road in a server farm.
Two in a giant server farm.
Yeah.
In the country of Iceland.
In the country of Iceland. So here's how they got it. The government allegedly found the Silk Road servers by attempting to log into them. So what they did was they say, by inputting random characters into CAPTCHA. Do you guys know CAPTCHA?
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's that thing that asks you to, like a squiggly F, and you mess it up once. And what they did
was, like the new CAPTCHAs with the pictures. Show me how many signs are. Okay, I can do that one. Sign.
Is that a car? It's a kid with a Matchbox car. Do I click on that? Do I not click on that?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that thing, but the original version, which was just the squiggly stuff. So they started putting in incorrect information, examining the packets that were being sent back and forth between the two machines, and allegedly in one of these packets they found an IP address.
Wow.
So how did they really do it? I think they did it with hacking.
Of course they did. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have been able to get into those Icelandic servers if they hadn't hacked the fuck out of them.
Through CAPTCHA, of all things.
Right. CAPTCHA my balls.
Yeah.
Here's a picture of my balls, everybody. How many balls? How many pictures have my balls
in
it?
What is the ball?
What is the law in regards to it being outside of the country?
I don't know. Can the government use hacking techniques to gain access to private information? Is the question I'm going to pose there.
Well, I mean, I think that's what is a big thing, like Snowden.
Yeah.
Said, I mean, if we're going to talk about the modern equivalent of the scapegoat, Snowden.
I mean, yeah. Snowden was the same time period.
Right.
This is the NSA. This is right before we knew the NSA was actually real.
Hey, I mean, this point, we're hacking into all of us. I mean, you, me, all four of us sitting here, our information was and is recorded in databases that the NSA still holds.
Yeah.
And because I'm talking about this, the camera on my iPhone is now pointed at my...
It's so true. Mine is looking at my balls right now.
So, if the U.S. government can hack into your personal information, should they be allowed to hack into a sovereign nation?
Does
the warrant for the Dread Pirate Roberts allow them to hack into a server in a sovereign nation? Allegedly, yes.
So if his information is coming out of a sovereign nation, technically through this Tor program, and where the actual servers are sitting in Norway,
Iceland.
Do we have to go through governmental access, or can they hack into it to get this access? That's a good question, John.
That is a good question.
It's a very good question.
There's a lot of, if you read the Free Ross website, there's a lot of. His attorneys are really harping on the Fourth Amendment, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Too. Not too much. So there was a trial, and Ulbricht was actually not allowed to pursue the government's evidence.
What?
That's correct. They dumped 3,500 pages on him 1 week before the trial.
Oh, kind of like when they dropped the newest spending bill?
Oh, yeah.
And they dropped, 3,000 pages, and you guys had less than 12 hours to read it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, government.
According to his legal team, he was not really allowed to challenge the murder-for-hire allegations either.
Wow.
Involved in this case also, according to Andy Greenberg of Wired, he said there were two convicted corrupt federal agents, Secret Service agent Sean Bridges, who stole hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin from the Silk Road.
Oh, of course.
And DEA agent Karl Mark Force attempted to extort Ulbricht and even sold him secret information from the Silk Road investigation.
His name is Karl Mark?
What?
Karl Mark Force.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, if that is his real name.
Well, of course. I mean, you're going to get these depraved fucking piece of shits. They're going to burn as much money off of this cryptocurrency and this site as they possibly can. I mean, it's millions upon millions upon millions of dollars anyway, right, that are being transferred through the site. Why not siphon tons of it off?
Yeah, who's going to miss a couple hundred grand of pieces of fake money?
Mm-hmm.
It happens nowadays with search and seizures in American homes.
Yeah, so if you're wondering, Ulbricht was not allowed to bring that up in his trial either.
Get the fuck out of here.
So anyway, he was found guilty, surprisingly, and sentenced to two life sentences plus 40 years. Now, let me ask you, why would a man with no prior criminal history get sent to prison for multiple life sentences?
Yeah, because they need a scapegoat. They need somebody to take the fall.
So if this happened right around the time of Snowden, do you think that's why? That plays a part into that?
I would think so. 2015 was when this trial was. So he appealed, and in 2017 his appeal failed. And you can follow the timeline and see what he has to say for himself at freeross.org. There's all the trial transcripts are there. Definitely check out that documentary, Deep Web. It's narrated by Keanu Reeves.
Nice.
No way.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He does a good job. And it's free if you have Amazon. I'm gonna send all my sources to everybody.
Cool.
Because this is endless, and I could go on and on. But basically, in 2017, he appealed under the Fourth Amendment, saying that there was just tons of illegal search and seizure going to Iceland, the way they caught him, everything that pissed you guys off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all found to be above board, which means that, to answer your question, yes, the U.S. government can evidently go in and get all of your information completely legally according to the Constitution. Oh, and the Silk Road.
Wow.
Version 3.1 is now being operated by the Dread Pirate Roberts, and instructions on how to log in are located at SilkRoadDrugs.org. anybody who wants to log into the Silk Road, just go to SilkRoadDrugs.org. I actually have the website open on my phone, but it gives you step-by-step instructions how to download Tor, how to turn everything off on your computer so you're just running Tor, and how to go to the Silk Road and begin purchasing your items nefariously with your Bitcoin.
So there is a new intonation, or what would you call that? A new version of the Dread Pirate Roberts, or could be the same Dread Pirate Roberts.
The legacy of the Dread Pirate Roberts.
So we don't know. I mean, because we don't officially know that this gentleman is the original or the Dread Pirate Roberts, but we don't know he's not not. The, you know, like, yeah. it's kind of cool to think, like, and if you go back to the whole name, the Princess Bride thing, it could be this continuation, or it could be the original Dread Pirate Roberts. We don't know. But this new version of the Silk Road is still available.
It's still up and running. If you look at the website Free Ross, they say that the Dread Pirate Roberts is actually a man by the name of Mark Karples, who is the CEO of Mt. Gox Bitcoin Exchange.
Oh, of course.
And you might have remembered that he was a guy that absconded with 850,000 bitcoins.
At that time, dude, it went in, like, 2011?
They lost $387 million.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, that's a lot of money back then, dude.
Yeah, so they say it's him on the website, but, I mean, I guess you'd have to look into it and check it out. But there's your Dread Pirate Roberts.
Awesome, man. Guys, seriously, go. We're going to have all of John's links will be attached to our podcast, depending, you know, no matter what podcast format you're listening to. Dive deeper into it, guys. I mean...
All right, so I'm actually on the freeross.org website right now, and they have a little blurb of other people who were convicted, you know, for crimes on the Silk Road. For example, Jan Slomp was convicted as a leading drug seller on the Silk Road. He got 10 years.
Not a lifetime. Not a lifetime in prison.
Two
lifetimes.
Peter Nash, convicted as a senior Silk Road admin, 17 months.
Yeah, because they probably all turned state's evidence and... Supposed state's evidence.
Blake Benthal, admitted organizer/operator of Silk Road 2.0, released with no sentence.
Fuck! Mm-hmm. Get the fuck out of here.
And there's Ross Ulbricht, convicted as owner-operator of Silk Road, double life without parole, plus 40 years.
Plus 40 years.
How
plus
the fuck do you... Years. What is a life sentence? 40 years? 60 years? Until you die? That's fucking crazy, guys. Well, that's us diving deeper into the dark side. If you want more research, we have that available to you guys, all right? Check out the links that we're going to be providing for this.
Please.
All right, guys, that was us diving deeper into the darker side, the Dread Pirate Roberts. John, thank you again very much for doing all the work there.
Thank you. That was awesome.
All the hard work. I mean, that seems like a K-hole of misery that you could have gone into probably a couple days, if not weeks, of information trying to mine that shit out of there.
I spent a lot of time on the internet.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and you didn't even, you honestly, like you were saying before, you didn't even, you couldn't have touched everything in that short period of time.
I didn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah, well, good. Thank you for all your hard work, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, hang in there, Ross Ulbricht.
We have sad news for you guys for next week. John is not going to be here.
No.
But there is a brighter side to the darker side in this manner. Rachel is going to be giving us diving deeper into the darker side next week, aren't you?
Nice.
Got some sweet stuff for you guys. I can't wait to good. Share what I have.
John has a prior engagement up in the state of Maine and cannot be with us next week.
I'll be roofing.
Pretty soon, within these next few weeks, John does frequently go up to these places and helps people out and family members, etc. We're going to try to figure out a remote access so that he can always be a part of this podcast. But until we fucking figure that problem out, you know, we're going to have to deal with it every once in a while. Right now is a segment that we're going to go into, guys, and it's called...